This episode is sponsored by Eternal Inc. and Machine Machine Co. Before we start, I just want to let you know what's going on with this episode. I did two interviews last month, one with Bradley Farrell, my guest co-host and also a past guest of the show. We're going to catch up with him. But then also I talked to a tattooer named Zach Hunter. And as I was listening back to both of these and editing them, I found a lot of interesting parallels, and there was just a lot of stuff that kind of popped up in each, but in different ways. So this episode is weaving those two conversations together. So we'll be popping back and forth, and I think you should be able to follow it pretty easily. But I hope you enjoy it. Okay, so thank you for joining me again for another episode of Books Closed. I'm Andrew Storitz, and I'm here with one of last season's best guests, Bradley Farrell, one of my favorite interviews from season two.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me back again. I'm sitting on the same exact chair as I sat in last time, but we're in a different apartment now.
True. It's a bit bigger.
It's a little bigger. Hold that mic right up to your mouth.
It's a little bit more sultry.
It's definitely like my more voice. Sultry.
Do you mind if I drink during it?
No, go for it.
Okay.
I think I enjoyed our last interview because we talked about tattooing not the entire time.
Mm.
But that's kind of a tattoo podcast, so I try not to deviate too far, but we got to talk about some other stuff that I thought was cool.
True.
But the reason that I'm back is because last time you were my novelty as a retired tattooer compared to all the rest. But since that podcast, you have started tattooing again.
Indeed.
And you're not banging out walk-ins every day or anything like that. But it seems like you're tattooing quite a bit with regularity.
Yeah. Twice a week, maybe.
Yep.
You know, I started just maybe once a week, and then it went to two times a week, and then I went to like four times, and I was like, this is too much, you know, so I had to pull it back. It
starts to feel like a job again.
And yeah. Yeah, definitely. I want it to feel like something that I really, really love to do, and that I give the right amount of attention to, you know, the person that's getting tattooed.
So what was it like getting back into the swing of it? Because I know last time we talked, I think you had said you had done a tattoo, and then that's what was kind of your awakening, where you realized that maybe this was something that you would wanted to try to do again.
So the day your podcast came out, I went to visit Five Points, Chris Garber, you know, at the shop, just to hang out, you know, and with him and Jeb. And I walk in and he was like, yo, man, I just heard your podcast. It's sick, dude. It's so cool. You should totally start tattooing again. And I was like, get the fuck. Now, what's really funny, I was like, get the fuck out of here, Joey, you know. But what was interesting about that was like, some people know the story, you know, some people don't. This will be the first time. And it's not necessarily meant to be a reason why I stopped tattooing, or he was very serious about it. But we were in Japan, 1999, tattoo convention.
You and Chris Garber?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were at the first, and you know, it was supposed to be the annual, but I think there's only one that happened afterwards, which was the next year, and then it just stopped. But yeah, we were in Japan, and I rub my nose a lot. It's just because I have allergies, I swear. Seriously. And it's also a little bit of a tick of mine some people know about, and they always make fun of it.
We'll let it slide. No one pointed it out in the last episode.
Well, I'm making it a point now.
Well, it's good, yeah.
Yeah, too much kratom. So.
Remember last time you asked if you touched your nose too much, and then I said no.
Yeah, yeah, then you sent a picture.
I texted you a screenshot of you touching your nose.
Exactly. So we're in Japan, right? And we're at the convention, and I go over to Chris. Now I've known Chris for a long time, but we never were. I would never consider him to be a close friend, or you know, even remotely close in the tattoo world that I would be connected to get feedback from. Even though New York City, punk rock, fucking CBGBs, like always seeing him and stuff like that. And he worked at Fun City and eventually, you know, after that Adorned. But I was taken back because I went up to him. And he was always one of my favorite tattoo artists and I wanted his opinion. So I showed him my portfolio, as a lot of tattooers in the day did. Now it's Instagram, right? But, you know, hard copy portfolios, like that, that's what you had. So
you're having him leave you comments on your photos in real life.
Yeah, face to face. And it wasn't like you would like something because he was your friend, right? Like on Instagram, you're just right. Liking shit. I think that was quite a, you know, a thing that took place very often with a lot of tattooers too. And I don't know how many tattooers were really, really brutally honest. Grime was honest in the sense that he would just be like, yeah, this fucking sucks, right? So whatever. But I never really got that from anybody else. But Chris was even worse. Chris was like, yeah, yeah, it's cool. And then he handed it back. I was like, nah, nah, dude, come on, man. Seriously. He was like, oh, seriously? You should quit.
Damn. How'd that make you feel?
Ooh, it was great. It was...
Because you want that honesty.
You want that honesty. I mean, I want that honesty at least, you know?
It hurts, but it's better to know.
Yeah. I don't even know if it hurts. I think that's like the self-deprecating part of, you know, that feels good. But I needed to hear it, you know? Because it makes you step back and just like look at everything very, very differently. Even though he said now that he was joking, there was a bit of a seriousness in it. You know, it was like, yeah, 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 sure, you know, quit. Now, it took me 2 years to quit after that, or maybe 3 or 4 or something like that. I think 2003.
So you're even worse at quitting than your tattoos were.
Exactly. But it's just the point that, you know, it's a story that a lot of people know and, you know, in the area and stuff. And so why I find that so funny is because I go to hang out with Chris and he says, oh, I just heard your podcast. It's fucking cool, man. You should totally start tattooing again. I'm like, you're the dude that told me to quit.
He's just fucking with you.
Yeah.
He's a contrarian.
Now, Jeb works there as a tattoo artist. And back in the day, you know, I tattooed Jeb a lot. So I didn't even know he did, you know, was into drawing or any of that stuff. Later on, I would come to visit him as he was working at Invisible. And, you know, I think he was Troy Denning's apprentice or something like that. So later on I would find out that he was really, really interested in tattooing. And so he works there now. And Jeb was like, yeah, dude, like across the room, like, yeah, dude, like I would so get tattooed by you again, you know? And then Chris, of course, was just the instigator, like, yeah, man, do it, do it. And I was like, what? Like, there's a lot going on right now at this very moment. And it was like a full shop, you know, 10 people are there and they're all tattooing. So it was just like it at the moment. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. And he was like, yo, just like a little Tibetan skull, like on my foot, like a little one. And I was like, eh. And Chris was like, come on, dude, you got to do it. I was like, all right, fine, I'll do it. So
it's hard to turn it down.
Yeah. And then Jeb shows me the drawing that he wants. And it's like this big, tiny Tibetan skull with like teeth that looked like they should be done in the single needle. And I'm like, the fuck? No way. You know, like yeah. It needs to be blown up. You know, he's like, is this too difficult for you? They're all circles. The eyes are perfect circles.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, that's all right. Let's do it. You know? So we put the stencil on and it's too small.
It was just that first night
you for did that
all
area.
This all happened in one night.
One night.
Yeah.
Put the stencil on and I'm like, this ain't gonna go good. It's too small, you know? And finally Chris comes over. He's like, dude, man, you make that bigger, man. Look at all the space around, you know, your foot. And I was like, yeah, Jeb, let's make it bigger. He was like, all right, fine. So we made it like twice the size. And then Chris is like, yo, we do some flames around it too. And I was like, yeah, Chris, like draw some Tibetan flames on it. So he did. And then I tattooed it. And now it's very rare that I get, I don't know, either excited or nervous or, you know, anxious about anything really. But here's like you know, Garver, like right here, looking at everything that I'm doing on the second tattoo that I've done. And they're like perfect circles for the eyes and stuff. And it was a little stressful, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, this isn't fun. I don't want to do this again. This is not fun. Like the feeling that I'm getting. But as I was doing it, he was like, dude, like great, you know? And then after I was complete, Jeb was like, this looks great. This looks awesome. Chris came over. He was like, yo, that looks, I can't believe it. It looks like you never stopped. So anytime you want to tattoo at the shop, we would love to have you. And so I've been tattooing at 5 points, you know, since then. And it's, it was an honor to, you know, to be completely, you know, transparent. I think it's an honor to work with all of those guys there. All those guys are amazing. But it's just funny how, you know, the person that told me to quit is now asking me to tattoo there.
That's amazing.
I don't think because I'm good, but because, you know, we're just friends, you know, so.
Well, I saw the picture of that tattoo and then all the stuff that you've done since then. And it really, I thought the same thing, that it doesn't look like someone who's not tattooed for a long time. And not even just to be nice, like it would. They're nice. The tattoos you do look nice. It doesn't, it's not like, oh, you know, getting back into it, this is a little fucked, or like, right, it's a little shaky or gnarly or whatever, but it's cool. Like, it's not even that. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, I appreciate that. It's, as we all know, it's a super, super hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Tattooing is so hard.
But I think it's also so, I mean, even though it's been a long time, you've made those motions so many times that, I mean, it also makes sense that it can be kind of like riding a bike in some way.
Yeah, that's quite cliche, right? It's the cliche to say. It's like, you know, just like riding a bike. You know, you understand balance once you do it. You can't read about balance, right? Like, you can read as many books as you want. Ain't going to learn about balance. You got to, you know, do it. And I think that watching as many YouTubes videos as you can with tattooing, like, it's not going to happen unless you do it.
Right.
And
you can watch every season of Ink Master and you still might not be an Ink Master.
Yeah. Yeah. I've only watched one episode, the first episode.
Maybe that's what did it for you.
But hey,
that was the break.
No, I think I was forced for some reason. I was in the hospital. I was getting one of my surgeries, and for some reason, the TV would not change. It was almost like maybe it was fate in some way. I already stopped, right? So I already stopped tattooing, but maybe it was, I don't believe in fate. That's stupid.
All right. I'm here with Zach Hunter. Appreciate you coming here. Where do you tattoo?
Thanks for having me. I tattoo at Gypsy Rose Tattoo in Jacksonville, North Carolina, primarily. Mm-hmm. But I travel a lot. I travel all over for conventions and guest spots and stuff like that.
And for podcasts now,
yeah. But for the most part, I tattoo, like my home shop is in Jacksonville, North Carolina, at Gypsy Rose Tattoo. It's my favorite shop. It's actually really funny, like, how I work there, because it's like growing up, that was like always this, like, the spot in North Carolina, you know, like, mm-hmm. There's several like bangers in North Carolina, but like growing up, to me, that was like the shop, you know what I mean? Like, everyone knew that they put out good work. They were always busy. The shop was gorgeous. So
it's cool to get a spot in a shop that you've looked up to for basically your whole existence too.
Yeah, it really is too. Cause I started like stupid young. So from like 14 to, you know, I'm 24 now, so from all that age, I'd always looked at Gypsy Rose as like, oh, that's the shop, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That's the one I want to be at.
So you were 14 when you started tattooing?
Yeah. Yeah. Ever since I was a kid, I thought tattoos were fucking cool. I just thought they were rad. I saw them on people. I knew that I always wanted them. Like, I used to watch, like, Ami James, which I saw that you had a discussion with on TV and stuff, you know, because I grew up, I'm 24, so I grew up in that era of like TV tattooing. So to me, I didn't know anything else. I don't remember like Miami Ink and LA Ink or whatever those shows were, you know, and I was a child and I thought they were cool, you know,
I'm almost 10 years older than you and I grew up in that era too.
For sure.
So yeah, it was definitely got to be ingrained in your upbringing.
Yeah, I was a child, man. I think, I mean, I probably started watching those shows when I was, I'd say like 10 years old maybe. And I just thought they were neat, man. I was like, this is cool. You know, but that's all I thought about it. I wanted to be a musician. You know, I played guitar or whatever. So I was 14 and I was like hanging out with a bunch of hood rats, breaking into cars and doing all that bullshit that, you know, 14 year olds do.
I never did that.
Good for you. Don't do that. If you're 14 watching this, don't do that.
Coming up next on our Shaming Our Guest podcast.
Yeah, for sure. You got a lot of that here. But yeah, man, I was like hanging out with a bunch of sketchy ass kids and doing a bunch of sketchy shit. And one day, it was my, if I remember correctly, I want to say it was my buddy's older cousin. And we were in this like dingy garage, like, I don't know, smoking pot and doing whatever we were doing. And he like broke out this like toolbox. And it was disgusting. Looking back on it, it's fucking gross. But he had like this little homemade prison machine attached to like some batteries, you know, and I never knew anything about any of that prior. And he was like drunk as shit. He's like, I'm gonna tattoo my leg. And I was like, fuck, whatever. That sounds cool. You know, I'd never had tattoos or anything like that. I was 14. So anyway, he was tattooing his leg and I was like, dude, like, give me one. You know what I mean? He's like, nah, man, you gotta pay for it, you know? And I was like, well, I don't have any money, you know? He was like, go get me a pack of beer. So I like, went to the store and I just grabbed a pack of beer and bolted out, you know, and just bailed. I did that shit all the time. So it was normal. Bailed out with a pack of beer, you know, and went back to his house and I got him like a, I think it was like a six pack or something of beer and whatever. And he tattooed a little cross on my leg about this big. And I remember watching him do it and I was like, man, I could fucking do that. You know, I don't know. Just something went through my head. I was like, I could do that. He like passed out if I remember correctly. And it was like me and then like my other buddy who was like 14. And I was like, yo, let me tattoo your leg, you know? And he was like, nah, bro, that's fucking weird. And I was like, let me do it. And he's like, all right. And I don't know. I turned on the fucking machine. It was like a guitar string and like some yellow or green. I don't remember. Some kind of India ink or some shit like that. Some super sketchy prison shit. Like probably used the same needles. Like I'm surprised I didn't catch anything. But tattooed his leg. And I thought it was the fucking coolest thing known to man. You know what I mean? So like I stayed up that night until like, oh, I mean, the sun came up and I tattooed my fucking entire thigh with that machine. Yeah, like fucked my whole thigh up. It's really bad. And I mean, hours I spent out there just like trying to figure out the mechanics of it. Trying to, you know, I just became super obsessed with it. And that obsession never stopped when it came to that. Like, watched all these videos on like how to tattoo. And then it stemmed from that to like, oh, I know what has a motor. My mom's fucking DVD machine or VCR machine or whatever. So I took it apart and took out the motor and like looked up how to make a tattoo machine, which on YouTube, you can find anything, you know? So I put it all together, put my mom's thing back together, and I continued to tattoo my leg. So my leg is fucking jacked. I did that for like a couple weeks, and then I had like hustled up enough money to order like an eBay kit. And I just actually started in that time period. I found like a house tattooer that would tattoo me, and he had like, you know, China machines and shit like that. And he was terrible. And I actually like lived at his house for a good amount of time and like learned how to tattoo underneath him. You know what I mean? And I was 14, like turning 15. And, I would just watch him tattoo and I learned so many bad habits, you know? So, you know, probably a year goes by of me just like having some machines, and I turned 16. I was still doing the same shit, you know, but I was doing it like, basically my mom had kicked me out. Right. First, duh. You know, she worked at the courthouse. Like my brother's a Marine, like, you know, my family they're pretty normal people. So they're like, who the fuck is this kid like doing this? You know what I mean? They didn't understand it. Nor did I expect them to understand it, but I knew that's what I wanted to do, and I was dead set on it, and there was nothing that could fucking change my mind. You know, I mean, I'd been like, my parents had like sent me away, and I just like found a way to come back and tattoo again. So this guy, local tattooer, had like seen some of my tattoo shit and like hit me up and was like, hey man, I'll break your fucking hands if you keep, like, that was the exact terminology, I will break your fucking hands if you continue to tattoo. And I if I remember correctly, I had someone take a picture of my hands and was like, go ahead, or something like that. You know what I mean? So some smart ass shit like that. And he didn't like it. And he like social media, like went off on this thing and posted all this stuff about me. And I remember hitting him up, like, hey man, if you don't like it so much, teach me how to tattoo. And he was like, go fuck yourself. And I was like, cool. You should really teach me how to tattoo. So after like a couple weeks of me like bitching to him online, like every day I hit him up, like, hey man, you know, I'll stop tattooing if you just show me how to tattoo the right way. I'm going to do this no matter what, you know. Finally, he was like, all right, but you got to pay me. I didn't have fucking money, you know. So I hit my grandfather up and I was like, can I work at your warehouse? And he was like, yeah, sure. You know, I was a dropout. I was pretty much homeless. I was just like living with friends and stuff. And he was like, yeah, sure. And so I would like get a ride to his warehouse every day and work for a couple hours, make enough money to go apprentice, I guess. But it was like at his house. He was a legitimate tattooer. Like he worked at a shop, but the owner of that shop was like, fuck no. Like you can't have that was a child. You know what I'm saying? You can't have that kid in here learning how to tattoo. Hell no.
Yep.
And he was like, bring all your machines, you know, like he tricked me. He was like, bring some money and bring all your machines. And I was like, all right. So I like went to his house, you know, got dropped off. First day I got there, he like took all my machines. He's like, yeah, show me how to take them apart. And I was like, I don't fucking know, you know? So I just kind of acted like I knew what I was doing. I took them apart and he's like, cool, they're going to stay like that. Here's some microns. here's some tracing paper and a bunch of flash. And he actually was cool, man. He sent me home with like homework because he knew I dropped out of school. And he was actually a good influence, you know? He ended up fucking me over super hard, but he was a good influence. He like gave me drawing material and kind of made me do homework about like, where did tattooing come from? Who made the first tattoo machine? What are the parts of a coil machine? Like really did teach me the basics. So about like 3 months into that, I'd been paying this dude pretty much every dollar that I had. You know, if I had enough money to like eat at McDonald's and sleep on the homie's couch, I was cool, you know? And so one day he just never responded. Couldn't get up with the dude. You know, and this was like a everyday thing. And I was like, man, I can't get up with this guy. And I just given him like $600, you know, which to me was like every fucking dollar I'd been saving for months. So I went back to it. I went back tattooing. And it was crazy that like just from that, like probably a couple months of like minimal knowledge, how much I had grown as an artist. Definitely wasn't a tattooer at all by any means at that point. But I went back to it, you know.
Yeah, when you're starting from nothing, everything you learn is going to make you progress for so sure. Fast at the beginning. A huge thank you to Eternal Ink for sponsoring this episode, where it starts with one color. We've seen it happen a million times, so we know all about it. It always starts innocently. You're curious, you're tempted, suddenly there's a phone in your hand, you're making the call, you're buying a small bottle of Eternal Ink just to try it. In a few short weeks, there's a fresh set of Eternal Ink standard set of 67 colors sitting proudly on your tabaret. We understand. We know what's coming next. A month later, the Halo set, the Mike Chambers set, the Rember set, and the Motor City set all arrive on the same day. You're in heaven. That's 113 colors so far. Tomorrow will be the perfect day. It's a day you've been thinking about for over a month. In just 16 hours, Liz Cook, Frank Lanatra, Brian Sanchez, and Kelly Doty will be at your door. No, not the artist, but their ink sets. You are hooked on Eternal Ink. Your tattoo art is better than ever. Your list of appointments will take years to finish. You're ecstatic. You are also still buying a lot of Eternal Ink, maybe too much, but maybe not. Either way, Eternal Ink may have pulled you from a drab, colorless rut of tattoo art. They may have changed your life, and for that, on behalf of this podcast and Eternal Ink, I apologize, even though they meant for that to happen this way. Head on over to EternalTattooSupply.com, where they're offering a 20% discount off the full retail price on all Eternal Ink colors. Offer includes both single bottles and full sets in all available sizes. Excludes combination with other offers not to be used with the Color of the Week promotion. To receive this discount, enter the promo code BOOKSCLOSED at checkout, and that is at EternalTattooSupply.com. Promo code BOOKSCLOSED for 20% off your order of Eternal Ink colors.
In the 25 years that I've been tattooing and building machines, I can't tell you the amount of instances where I've seen tattooers acting as if they're helpless if they break a spring. Machine is a series of educational videos that we created to better acquaint the tattooer with his or her tools.
God damn it.
This is not meant to be a replacement for a traditional apprenticeship. We go over things like cutting springs, and how the thickness of springs and width of springs and the length of springs relate to the weight and length of the armature bar and how that relates to the geometry of the frame, the function of a liner versus a shader, the differences, why those differences exist, and how it relates to your pigment and ultimately how it's applied to the skin. We're doing our best to make sure that you come out of this feeling like you have the confidence to work on your tools and that you can answer questions about your tools, not just ask them.
But if you're doing something big, like a half sleeve or a full sleeve or, you know, something that involves some background or something that flows with the muscle of, you know, it just changes. Immediately it changes from paper to skin, and the way that it flows is not the way that it flowed on paper. And so you just get, you know, you get disempowered or you get empowered to want to do, you know, want to learn how to do it right the next time, or, you know, what you learned, what was wrong. But it's, I'm just basically saying at the end of the day, tattooing is very, very difficult from just being an artist, you know, and seeing something on paper.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always, like we talked about before, to see newer generations of tattooers, just how quick or how much more quickly people are able to learn and to develop. And that will always continue. It's going to be so streamlined at a certain point. But I also really believe that you have to truly make certain mistakes or do things in a way you don't like before you can really, like, learn the lesson of something.
100%.
So it makes me wonder, though, like, where's the balance then? Because if they're able to develop so fast, I mean, there's a lot of corners you can cut by having someone there to help you and to give you suggestions or to help you avoid certain mistakes. But I feel like you're not really learning it at that point until you can see in your own work, like, okay, this isn't what I like. Because a lot of times if I'm doing something and I just can't see, like, I know that it's not what I want, I have to take what I've done and hold it up next to a photo of something that I think I want to do. And then that's when it can become clear. But if you're like looking at something you really like and then you have the idea in your head, you're just seeing yourself able to do what you like.
Yeah. Well, I think in a lot of ways, it's interesting because you could not be such a great artist. You could not be such a great tattoo artist, but you could look at other people's tattoos and know tattooing well enough to what it should look like or should be, or how the, you know, way to do finger waves in a certain, you know, like, you know, and you know the flow, that you could actually explain that to somebody that's trying. You can't figure it out yourself unless somebody actually explains it, right? I mean, you can figure it out, but it just takes triple the amount of time, right? Or double the amount of time. If you're always looking at the stuff that you're doing, or even looking at other people's stuff, doesn't mean that you know how to do what they do. You actually have to be told. And that's what I was saying in the last episode, was like, it didn't happen for me. And maybe it's never, you know, happened for me. But that Oprah aha moment was Grime basically saying, this sucks. And here's why.
Like, yeah, that's the key.
Here's why was the thing. It wasn't like, you know, it's interesting. It is about Garver. And it's about everyone in the shop in 5 points. It's incredible to see how willing Garver's ability to be sharing as he is and teaching as he is. I mean, he has an apprentice, you know. He might even have two apprentices. But he has an apprentice. But besides that, like, I recall going in there for the first, you know, couple of weeks or something and seeing tattooers draw something. And Chris being like, hey, man, you're going to do that? And they're like, yeah, it's totally psyched. And they're like, he's like, yeah. And he takes a piece of tracing paper and he puts it over it. And he's like, you know, the head's a little small. And maybe you want, like, let me just, you know, he like sketches just the size. And it's like, you know, the proportion's a bit better right there. And that's like massive to have that kind of guidance and help. And,
and just the overall environment where everyone is on board with that sort of communication.
And then all of a sudden the person redraws it And it's like, oh yeah. Right. And but you saw it too, you know, like I would look at it and be like, oh, that's cool, you know? And then you see the next version and you're like, oh yeah, now it's time to tattoo it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But you don't always see that. You know?
And what a luxury. And maybe I'd never think of that sort of environment because I haven't worked in one like that.
Right.
I've worked with able and very talented tattooers, but it's never been like that.
It's never been like that, even for me back in the day. Right. So as I said, Grime would say, I don't mean constantly like, you know, say his name, but I mean, how do you say it? Right. When that's the only person that basically would do that. Right. So
we've all got people, I think, that are like super influential in our growth.
Yeah. But I don't think like the stuff that I do looks like Grime shit. You know what I'm saying?
No.
So, but he would be like, no, this is wrong because of this. Now do it again. So, but he wouldn't put tracing paper over it and draw his version in the sense of like, this is what's wrong and maybe try this. Now, easily somebody could just take that piece of tracing paper and then trace what that person did. But that's not what we're doing. You know, we're just trying to learn our stuff. Like what's our style and version of the proper proportion of a tiger head, you know, on this drawing. And it's in all seriousness, I mean, Garber drew it in 8 fucking minutes with no sketching. It was just like, yeah, this is more like this, you know? And I was like, can I keep that? Because I've never seen anything like that done in my entire life.
And that's just a true understanding of why things work the way that they do. And that just shows like the experience, like,
yeah,
built upon the knowledge, then it's also doing it a bunch of times.
Yeah. And then to see how quickly, so I think it's kind of the mentorship, right? It's the mentorship. It's to have that kind of a person around that's willing to help you in that way or help everyone in that way. Really, he was open to everybody in the shop. You're in the shop, you know, his knowledge is your knowledge in that sense.
Yeah.
Maybe not your skill ability is his skill ability, but what he wants to show everyone, because he wants the shop to be as great as it could be. So when he does it, it's like everyone kind of crowds around. It's not like some like higher, you know, archy kind of thing. It truly is, because his experience is something you just can't read about. You know, you have to see it in person and be exposed to it. And the level of skill that I've watched just in drawing, forget about tattooing, but the level of skill in drawing in the past 6 months, not for me, everybody there has like doubled. Like when I first went there, I was like, yeah, yeah, it's cool, man. Everyone's, you know, tattooing is great, whatever. And then all of a sudden, like I look at it today and I'm like, damn, everybody just like that just excelled so quickly in their skill to draw. And I really do think it's because they have that kind of that mentor, you know, that help that's there. You know,
and that also makes them want to work a little harder or like put the extra time in, because then they don't want to be bringing in whack stuff either.
Mm-hmm.
So once they start getting the guidance and they know the kind of standard that, that, you know, the eyes that are going to be on the stuff that they do, I think that makes you want to work a little harder. And then that feeds that. So you're getting more knowledge, more like expedited experience through critique. And then also, you know, higher standard for yourself, more pressure, more time. And it's just like, it just works. I mean, that's like the ideal environment to learn.
And it's so funny. It's like, I don't know, man, like I hear people say all the time, like, oh, it came from nothing. And I'm just like, no, man, I truly came from fucking absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So I went back at it, man. I kept tattooing my buddies and people that knew me around town, really younger kids, you know, mostly. And then I used to hang out at this bar called the River Rat in my hometown in Wilmington. And like, it was like a super well-known bar that tattooers hung out at. And I just hung out just to be around the tattooers. They all fucking hated me. You know, they fucking hated me for sure. And granted, I would probably not like that kid either, you know. But there was this one dude named Drew Beavers. He tattoos innkeepers in Ohio. I kept bugging the shit out of him, man. I was probably 16, turning 17. Bugging the piss out of him, man. Just every day I saw him, hey, man, like, check out this tattoo I did. And he's like, yeah, it looks like dog shit. You should stop. And I'd be like, cool. Look at this one, though. And then over the course of a couple weeks of doing that, he was like, all right, that one looks all right. You know? I showed him this, like, tomahawk I did on my arm. I never changed it. It's just, I've kept it the same way. And he's like, you did that on yourself? And I was like, yeah. That doesn't look half bad, you know? He was like, what are you doing tomorrow? And I was like, nothing. I am fucking homeless. You know what I mean? Like, I sleep on friends' couches. I don't have a job, you know? He was like, come by the shop. And he worked at this super hood, like, sketchy, like, $20 minimum, like, hood shop, you know? He was way above working there. And it was kind of strange to me. Even at that age, I was like, why is this dude working at this fucking, like, dingy, like, shitty kind of establishment? I didn't understand it. But I was like, whatever. He's allowing me in a shop. I'm with it. And it was cool because where I was staying at the time, I didn't live very far away, so I could walk there. It was probably 2 miles maybe. So I'd wake up every morning, walk over there. And that was like my first real apprenticeship. And the rules were like no fucking tattooing, which I did anyway. I got caught. But yeah, you know, no tattooing. We'll tip you out, whatever, the whole spiel. And I did like a formal apprenticeship, not for very long though. And I probably did that for like a year. And I can't tell you how many times that I'd fucked up and gotten kicked out of that shop just for whatever, you know, like go home for the day. That probably happened once a week. You know, I fucked up a lot. But it was always just dumb shit that I did being like an angsty adolescent kid, you know, like selling fucking weed out the back of the shop or whatever, you know, getting in fist fights and shit like that, you know, like, so I was like, fuck, I got to straighten up. Damn. You know? And, he was really a father figure to me, man. I still have more respect for that dude than many people. And we still stay in contact to this day. But he really helped me through that whole process. So he took me to the health department and was like, all right, you're getting your permit. This does not mean you're a tattooer. And but I was still tattooing at the house and shit. I just didn't tell him, you know. Mm-hmm. And he found out and got super pissed. But yeah, so like I would basically apprentice all day. And I'd go home and like tattoo buddies for, you know, whatever, just enough to make like enough money to like not get kicked out of where I was staying, you know, enough money to eat a little bit of food or whatever. And so I was like doing good tattoos finally at 18, you know. I wouldn't say good, but you know, I was doing tattoos that didn't look like house tattoos.
Yeah, you'd come a long way.
Way far, for sure. So for my 19th birthday, right, my buddy at the time who I was staying with was like, yo, let's go tattoo, you know, I got some clients lined up for you in Raleigh. And it's actually weird because I had my girlfriend, like long-term girlfriend at that time, had like set up this big day for me to like go to the zoo and all this shit, you know what I mean? And
for your birthday?
Yeah, my birthday, because I just got arrested a couple weeks before that for some crazy shit. And like I was just stressed the fuck out. I didn't have lawyer money, like I was just really stressing, you know. And
so she wanted you to go see a giraffe or something.
Calm cheer me up. Yeah, dude. Fucking rhino would have made it better, I guess. But yeah, so like I was just super stressed and, you know, I just got out of jail and I was just bummed. But I was like, I'm going to do tattoos. I like loaded up a fucking toolbox and massage table and like everything. You know what I mean? It was like we were going to spend a week there and I was just going to try to make some money, you know, and do some tattoos. Well, on the way there, we had just gotten this car. It was like the super fast fucking, you know, whatever car had like subs in the back and all that shit, you know what I mean? And we were headed there and he was driving, I was in the passenger seat. And it's a little hazy. I mean, I remember majority of the accident, but I don't remember what initially started the swerving. But I think that he reached down to look at his phone. I know he had his phone in his hand. I'm not specifically sure what he was doing with it, but he had his phone in his hand. And we run off the road, right? Yeah. So we run off the road just a little bit. And I remember being like, yo. And that's all I said. I was like, yo. And he like looked up and that was it.
Well, it's funny because in addition to you, the only other retired tattooer I've had on the show is Scott Harrison.
Yeah.
Who has also, since I've talked to him, started tattooing again.
No way. Really?
Yeah. Like in a shop. Scott's like really tattooing again.
That's hardcore.
Yeah.
You know, I love Scott Harrison's stuff. And
me
I,
too.
You know, like him as a person. You know, he's direct, quite direct.
Yeah.
and he's a fun individual to be around. And I would say that I did not think that he would start tattooing again, you know, just as I thought that I would not start tattooing again. So it's just interesting to see where, you know, that takes you. However, that being said, I know for a fact that I could not tattoo every day. Not because I don't love it, but my body is just deteriorating too quickly. And I feel the stresses on everything of me, you know, on the muscles and my back and stuff like that. You know, I tattoo 4 hours and that's it. That's it for a couple of days, you know, like, and it's not because I tattoo wrong and I'm all hunched over and stuff like that, but it's just my, you know, what my body's been through and has gone through. And
yeah, it's intense.
It's just different, you know. Everybody's body is different. And my body is definitely basically saying, like, that's all you got, you know. So be happy with what you get out of me. And I'm not saying out of me, but, you know, my body speaking to me. Be happy with the time that you get out of me. And you know, just take it easy. Because I feel like I could get burnt out pretty quickly. And the pain that I go through could be a little bit more of the reason to stop again, you know, than actually just being like, let's just take this easy. Let's do, you know, one tattoo a week or two tattoos a week and enjoy the time that's here.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where you and Scott differed, because when you had originally stopped tattooing, you were kind of moving on to different projects and different focuses. Whereas Scott seemed to be the sole reason he stopped tattooing was because of physical inability to do it. And he was not happy about it, you know, right. It was a bummer. And so knowing that, I mean, it's cool. It's very cool to me that both of you are tattooing again, but especially for him, because his almost wasn't a choice.
Yeah.
So to see that he's in a place where hopefully he's doing it comfortably enough where it's not like fucking him up. I think that's very cool.
Yeah.
And so in that same sense, I recently sat down with a tattooer named Zach Hunter, who has one arm.
Wow.
Due to a car accident.
Wow.
And so after
how does he stretch?
Well, we'll have to ask him. Actually, I do have an idea, but I'm pretending not to. But you don't.
I don't, but it's incredible, and I can't wait to hear it.
And when we hit the guardrail, we hit it on my side. So my body had came out of the car. And when I tried to pull myself back in, I couldn't get my arm in. So my arm got snatched off, completely severed. Whoop, popped right the fuck off. It was like a, looks like when you throw a pencil and it goes, you know what I mean? I just saw it flip down the highway. And
Jesus,
it was gnarly, man. It was super gnarly. And so the car flipped, which this was the fucked up part. This is actually what fucked me up more than losing my arm, was we flipped front to back instead of side to side. And we were going so fast that we flipped a lot. So, and I didn't have a seatbelt on. So I was just being thrown up and down the car like a fucking baseball inside there. You know what I mean? Like, I got fucked up. And well, finally, the car came to like a stop. You know what I mean? And thankfully, we landed on the tires. We were on probably 100 and probably more than 100 yards away from where the initial thing happened. Like the initial like accident. We had flipped that far. I remember being inside the car, and I felt like a bug on like the windshield, just being tossed and tossed and tossed. And I was like, how many fucking times is this thing gonna flip? Like, I remember that going through my brain of being like, Jesus Christ, can this thing stop flipping? You know what I mean? And like, I hadn't realized that I lost my arm yet. Nothing had came to like, I didn't understand what's going on. All I understood was,
you can't even like feel pain or anything in that.
No,
arm.
No
it's
way.
It's just too crazy.
That's like a main question I get asked. Like, did it hurt? I'm like, no, I don't remember. You know, It was just, whoa. 1 second, you're like driving down the road, listening to music. The next second, you're like fucking tumbling. And it was just like, boom, 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 boom. Came to a stop. And I was like, oh, fuck. Thank God. And I looked over him and I was like, are you all right?
So you were still conscious.
I was conscious until surgery.
Yeah.
Which is what really fucked me up mentally and physically.
Wow.
I wish to God it would have knocked me out. But they say that if I had gotten knocked out, I would have died. So, because I wouldn't have been able to stay calm or whatever. So I looked over at him and I was like, yo, are you all right? And he was just like looking at me like crazy. The fucking look on his face was like, you know what I mean? And he was like, yo, your arm. And I was like, huh? But then it clicked. I remember watching it fucking come off of my body. And I looked down and it was gone. I mean, it was gone. You know what I mean? And it was just like, might be a little graphic, sorry. But it looked like, I remember it looked just like this. And I remember going into shock. I know that it's shock now, but at the time I didn't know what was going on. But my brain made me just scream over and over again, like, my arm, my arm, my arm. And I kept screaming the same thing. And then I kind of calmed down and was like looking around all crazy, you know? And Brad was like, yo, when the cops get here, like, you were driving. And that's all he said. And I was like, none of that processed. I was just like, okay, you know what I'm saying? Like, sure, can you fucking save me, please? Because I knew I was dying. Yeah, I jumped out of the car and tried to stand up, but that just wasn't a thing, you know? So I just kind of shimmied my way away from the car as far as I could, because in my brain, it was going to blow up. Like, that's where my head was at. I was like, this thing's going to blow up. I don't know why the fuck I thought that, but, you know.
I mean, it's a pretty logical conclusion.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember doing this, and, like, the feeling of not having your arm is the weirdest thing, because you're trying to grab shit that you just can't, you know.
It doesn't feel different.
Totally. I wasn't in pain. That's what everyone has, like, this thing of, like, it probably hurt so bad. I'm like, no, I didn't feel anything. I just remember being scared shitless, you know. And I'm man enough to admit that I was freaking the fuck out.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like a pretty clean removal of your arm at that point.
Right the fuck off. Yeah, I mean, I watched it flip down the highway. I was laying there screaming for someone to help, screaming like a fucking child, you know, freaking out. And this lady had come and she didn't know what to do. You know, all she knew was just to comfort me, you know, and I was just laying on the ground and I picked up my arm and all I saw was just like streams of blood just pumping out of my arm. And I was like, I'm going to fucking die. And I had that like thought of just like looking up and being like, God damn it. Like, I'm going to die, you know? And I remember, and it's funny now, but I do remember having the thought, and I swear on everything I love, I remember looking up and being like mad. I was like, this is how I go out? This is lame. This is fucking lame. Like, this is how I die? It's lame. You know, like, I wanted to die some cool ass, like, something cool. Not this bullshit. Not a car accident. You know what I mean? Like, not bleeding out. And so when you bleed out, I mean, you get weaker and weaker by the moment. I mean, it's just like, you know. But thankfully, irony really kicked in here. So I used to be this, like, fucking run from cops all the time and hate cops and fuck cops, blah, blah, blah. An off-duty police officer saw the accident happen, saw my arm. Actually, from what he said, he almost ran over my arm. So he was like, holy shit, you know. Pulls over. And he runs straight to me. His name's Ken Walker. I've got his name tattooed on my leg. Runs right over to me. Doesn't even hesitate. Just jumps into it. This dude had been a cop for like 25 years. He was not a young man. Older dude. Hops right on top of me. Like, gets on top of me, right? And he starts ripping my shirt apart. And he like takes my shirt and he wraps it around my arm and just ties it as tight as he can. The blood didn't stop going out yet. And I kept passing out. Like, kind of. You know, I was like fainting. I remember myself getting faint. And he was like smacking me in the face, you know, and he was like, yo, if you fall asleep, you're going to fucking die. And I was like, fuck, I ain't going to sleep. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm up now, homie. Like, so, and I said the words, it's my birthday, because it was my birthday. And that lady lost her shit. I remember looking at her. She was crying harder than I was. You know what I mean? Like, I was just more pissed. That's how I was going to die. I remember that. You know, I just kept saying, hey, you know, like, tell my mom. You know, my mom's name's Shannon, tell her I love her. You know, my dad's name's Danny, tell him I love him, you know. Sorry for all the shit I put him through. And I was just like giving my last words to her, you know. And this lady was just unconsolably crying, you know. Of course, this was probably really hard for her to deal with.
Damn.
Yeah, it was gnarly. But yeah, I remember having a moment of clarity during that, which is wild. Which I think is a good and a bad thing now, because when a lot of people have these like near-death experiences, you know. But I think that's about as close as near death as you can get. And I was there, you know. And I remember I get asked a lot, like, weren't you scared? And it's wild. I really wasn't. I was for the first couple minutes, and then it all went away, you know. I was like, man, all right, this is it. It's cool, you know. And I remember feeling like, all right, I'm good.
Because it's so real, you can't even, there's no point in being scared.
No, man, this is it.
Because you've accepted it.
I'm dead. I'm going to fucking die today. And that's cool. You know,
fuck, man.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough. So I hear the sirens.
What happened to your friend?
So he bailed.
So he was okay.
Yeah, he was fine. Yeah.
Did he have a seatbelt on?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Well, it's even fun. He was my best friend. I mean, he took me in. He's the guy that like took me in. You know, he was 31 at the time and I was 18, turned 19. And he really took me in, man. Like, let me stay there. You know, like really, really like valued what I was doing. And I had a lot of respect for him. You know, now none at all, obviously. He bailed. I mean, he took off running from the accident. He shot off. And he was on the run for months because they were looking for him for felony charges for fleeing the scene of an accident with serious bodily injury and all types of shit.
Patrol searching for a guy who crashed his car right there on I-40, leaving his teenage passenger with serious injuries. That guy behind the wheel just ran away after the crash. Troopers say 31-year-old Brad Ventechinque of Wilmington ran off the road near the Highway 96 exit in Johnston County and crashed right there into the median wires. His 18-year-old passenger's arm was severed by those wires. Zachary Hunter was taken to Wake Med. He should recover. Ventechinque ran away. They haven't been able to find him. Troopers say speed did not play a role in the crash, and they're unsure if alcohol played a role since the driver ran away.
And I kept yelling for him too, which is wild too. And he just never, I realized he was gone. And it was wild because, like, now that I look back on it, like, that's definitely his character. You know, he was a fucking criminal. You know, I mean, that's what they do. If they feel like they're going to jail, they're going to roll out. Because he didn't have a license. I didn't have a license. We didn't have insurance. You know what I'm saying? Like, that wasn't a thing, you know?
I mean, if the first thing he thought to say to you was, you were driving, and he's already covering his ass.
First words came out of his mouth. Fuck. Yeah. Yeah. So he got sentenced to like 5 years in prison. The surgeon had came in the room. This is after I got airlifted. And basically, I was like, am I going to die? And I kept asking that. And he was like, I'm not going to lie to you, man. I don't know. You've lost a lot of blood. You're fucked up. You know, like, got any phone calls you need to make or anything you need to say, would you like a priest? He asked me like what my faith was, and I was like, yeah. He wanted someone to come speak to me. I didn't realize what had happened. I knew I lost my arm, but it didn't click yet. I was just like, holy shit, I'm alive. Like, that's crazy, you know? Damn, my back hurts. That was what was going through my head, you know? So I had 4 surgeries because I still wasn't out of the woods. I didn't know that, but I knew that I was alive, and that was good enough for me. So, I mean, it was like, woke up, and they were like, we got to take him back in. You know, that went on for days, man. It was just like, woke up, back into surgery. Woke up, back into surgery. And, like, it was just a shit show, you know? Finally, like, I think I had, like, 4 or 5 surgeries. I'd woken up, and they were like, hey, man, like, you're good. You're alive. You're going to live. And I was like, ha! Got you again, bitch, you know, with life, you know what I'm saying? And then probably, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour after waking up, there's like my whole family's around me and shit, and I was just like, fuck, it just clicked. Like, god damn, dude, I lost my arm, my fucking right arm, you know? I'm never gonna tattoo again. And I was like, well, fuck, if I can't tattoo again, I don't want to be here, because that's it for me, man. Like, I knew at that age, and I know now, that's it for me, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I was just like, fuck this, you know, like, thanks for saving me, but like, not really, you know.
There was no chance of reattaching the arm. Is that even a thing that can be done?
I don't know. I know they said that they.
I'm sure they would have if they could have, but.
Absolutely. Yeah, those doctors were phenomenal. I had a doctor named Dr. Riley, and she was just, dude, super cool. I mean, there's photographs of the wreck, and you can see, like, legitimate, looks like a fucking body was there. You know what I mean? That's like, honestly, like, to be completely real with you, like, those are the only pictures I can't look at. Like, I can look at pictures of my severed arm. I can look at pictures of the car. I can look at pretty much anything. But those ones, it fucks with me, you know, like, mentally, like, ugh, you know.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think
that's the place you were supposed to die.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably some mental shit that I should probably talk to someone about. But fuck that. I'm not doing that either.
Why not?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Everyone's been trying to get me to seek therapy for years, but I just like,
maybe it's too soon still.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't long ago. It happened, 5 years ago. It was 5 years ago. I'm 24. So 18, 19, shit, less than that. 4 years ago. I don't know. Whatever. I can't do math. I didn't graduate, but,
I mean, that's like a long time in terms of like giving you time to adapt physically and everything to life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just learning how to mentally adapt to everything, you know? Yeah. I mean, I think I physically adapt because I didn't have a choice.
Right.
And I don't fucking have an education. I don't have wealthy parents. I don't have wealthy anybody and near me. So it was like, it wasn't even about financials for me. I moved into this other house, right? With like some buddies, and we were just like fuck ups, you know what I mean? Like we were just partying all the time and having a good time, but I still, you know, was on my shit. And I had a chalkboard. Like there was actually, okay, so there was a chalkboard in this house, which I just thought was wild that someone had a chalkboard in there. Like a big fucking, you know, fucking chalkboard. And I was like, that's cool. I'm gonna try to draw on that. And I don't know. Something clicked with it. I was able to draw on a big scale so I could be more loose and fluent and stuff like that. I could draw like kerns. I could get, you know, circles and squares bigger. I wasn't drawing on something this big. I was drawing on something this big. So it made more sense.
It's like having a hose and you try to like write something on the ground in water. It's
perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what it was like. And I never thought of it like that. You know, I never asked anyone for help at that point in time. But I got the chalkboard and I'd spend lots of time on that thing, you know, and that's when it was like, oh shit, like maybe I can do this again. I'd done a tattoo at that point in time and it was fucking jacked. Like I did this rose on this random kid's thigh and I didn't even want to do it. He like fucking talked me into it. You know, I was playing music at the time. I was in a band and we were traveling and playing music. And we actually did, surprisingly, it actually went good. You know what I mean? Like it went further than I ever thought it would. So we played music and stuff, but there was always just, it just wasn't that fulfilling personally. It was cool, but it wasn't like, it was enough to get by. And at that point in time, you know, I'm willing to be honest about this stuff. I think people that tell their story needs to tell the full story. So I became super addicted to drugs at that time because doctors are pieces of shit and they give you copious amounts of pills and they're just like, have at it, you know? So I became super drug addicted. I even know it, you know, I didn't even realize it you know, there's this magical pill that can take all your pain away. And to this day, I'm in a lot of fucking pain. I've been sober for, 3 years, you know, something like that. And to this day, I'm in pain every fucking second of every day I'm in pain, you know? So, but I got to deal with it. And that's my life now. So years of being on painkillers to nothing. Out of just cold turkey, I was fucking sick as a dog. You know, I went to the hospital and they were like, oh, you're just withdrawing. I'm like, what the fuck is that? You know, what does that mean? Like, oh, well, and they explained it to me. And
why wouldn't they discuss that with you?
Because they're, when they take you off the meds, shit.
I mean, this is obviously a much larger issue than we're going to be able to tackle.
Oh,
here today,
god, but... yeah, that's what I was getting at, is that it's just such a it's terrible. Yeah,
just like one of many stories that I'm sure play out very similarly.
Yep. That's and that's, you know, the whole opiate crisis. I'm like, man, a lot of it stems from that, you know.
Yeah,
it definitely stemmed from it for me, you know. And so I was sick as fuck, and this guy that I knew, he's like, hey man, if you snort a little bit of this, you'll feel better. And I was like, fucking anything that's gonna make me not feel sick, I'll do it. And that was heroin. You know, I can be honest about that.
Yeah,
a lot of people who've been addicts before, they shy away from talking about it, and I think that if you're gonna tell your truth, you should tell your truth. You know, that's part of my truth, is that I was a full blown heroin addict. I never shot it up or anything like that. And maybe this is too explicit to talk about, I don't know. But it's just what it is.
I think everyone at this point, it's sad that it has affected almost everyone probably at this point. We all know people who've died, and
for sure.
Yeah, it's fucked.
It's super fucked. And
so we should be talking about it.
I think that's my thing, is it should be talked about. It should be vocalized, because, you know, that's the only way for any kind of change to happen, is the realization that there's a problem.
While dealing with depression and drug addiction, Zach was still trying to get his left hand to do all the drawing that it had never done before. But unfortunately, the addiction overtook everything, and he sold off his car, his tattoo equipment, everything that he had. Finally, after some time passed, he was bouncing at a bar, and his co-workers took him aside, told him, "We know what's going on with you, and how can we help?" And with their support, he was able to withdraw from drugs and get refocused on what was truly important to him.
Zach recalls the night those friends threw a surprise party for him to celebrate this massive turning point in his life.
It was awesome. It was awesome. It was like a celebration of me being clean and not being a fuck up anymore. And like, I got like all my charges taken care of and like quit being a, I just quit being a fuck up. That was the day that I decided to like be an adult, you know, and just like quit being so hard headed and like, damn it. And it actually put a lot of pressure on me because it was like, damn, these fools put together like thousands of dollars to get me a prosthetic arm, to get me like a new car, to get me like most importantly, tattoo equipment.
How are you able to tattoo with one arm? Let's just talk about that directly. How do you stretch skin?
Okay, so Stoney St. Clair, favorite tattooer of all time. He was all fucked up.
Yep.
My dog's name is Stoney. Huge influence to me. I didn't know about Stoney St. Clair until I started like getting tattooed heavily, and then I heard about him, and I have a ton of his flash tattooed on me now. Anyway, I watched Stoney Knows How. If you're a tattooer and you have not seen Stoney Knows How or haven't
read it, greatest.
Fuck, man.
With a young Ed Hardy.
With fucking young Ed
so
Hardy.
So cool.
Man, coolest thing on the planet to me. Anyway, he was all fucked up, man. He had all kinds of...
Put your arm right up there for me, boy.
I like how he was like, you know who I am? You know, I'm famous. I just love that dude.
Yeah, he had the coolest attitude.
He was just the coolest. So I watched a video on him, and I kind of just, honestly, like when I first started like learning how to stretch again, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Like I had no idea. Like I kind of didn't. Like I would just like kind of bounce it off the skin super hard and like it would just, I don't know. I didn't know what I was doing. So I saw that video or saw the documentary and read into him, and he wrapped paper towels around his pinky and index finger. I do the same thing. I also rely on my gloves. I use latex gloves, which have a lot more grip, which I know some people are allergic to latex. So I do have to go through the process of being like, are you allergic to latex? You know,
yep.
Which that sucks. I tattoo a lot of people. So when they are allergic to latex, I got to go to nitrile, and it's harder for me to stretch because you don't get that grip, you know. But so I basically use the backside of my hand and my pinky and ring finger to stretch the skin, essentially. And also really rely on my machine. Just that fucking, the machine I have now is, I use one machine, you know, I don't use, and I know that's very unlike most tattooers. They have like, oh, I use this for this, or I use that for this. Like I have one machine. That's what I use. I own like three of the exact same machines, or well, two. And I really rely on my machine, and I mostly rely on like my dexterity in my hand to pull against the skin.
Yeah,
and there's certain parts
on
of the body that I won't tattoo. Like necks, not hell no. Your throat, fuck no.
I wish I had an excuse not to tattoo those spots.
Just like, can't do it, buddy. Yeah. You know, that's, yeah. I kind of overuse that excuse sometimes, for sure. I'm not going to lie.
Earned.
Straight up. Yeah, people are like, can you do this? And I'm like, man, I'm fucking crippled. Can't do it. Sorry. Anything that's like super stretchy, I usually shy away from. But then I'm also the guy that's like, fuck it, I'll give it a shot. And I'm sweating bullets halfway through it, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to dial that down a little bit, you know, like when some Marine comes in, he's like, I want to get my MOS on my ass. I'm just like, fuck, I'll do it. You know, and then halfway through, I'm like, why did I sign up for this? Like, this is hard, you know?
Yeah.
But,
you gotta get them to stretch their own skin.
Dude, I've done that too. When I was in Hawaii, I tattooed at the Hawaii show. Another amazing show. I was tattooing this chick's ribs, and she had this fucking just super, I don't know, man, I've never seen shit like that. It was like elastic. I think she used to have like a lot of weight and she had lost it all.
Yeah, that's typically, I think, what would cause that.
Whoa. I mean, it was like boom, you know. Yeah, I literally, yeah, I laid the stencil and I was like, man, I couldn't get a line in her to save my life. And I was like,
it's hard to know until you're in it before it's too late.
I've pulled the first line on her. We're here now, you know. And I was like, god damn. So it got to the point where I was like, all right, where do they put these gloves on? You know, go wash your hands, put these gloves on. And I had her like pull her own skin. And it helped, you know, but it was like, it looked like a fucking circus act because she was like, she was pulling her skin and I was literally sitting on the massage table, like on top of her gripping, you know, and it was a shit show, but it looked good. And that's like the ultimate goal. I don't really give a fuck about how it gets done, whatever. If it looks good and it's going to look good for 10 years or 20 years, 30 years, sick. Like, ultimate goal.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you're no stranger to adapting.
Yeah. Fuck.
what would you say was the hardest thing physically to adapt to?
Tying my shoes. That's a fucking off the bat for sure. I can do it, but it takes like an act of fucking Congress, you know what I mean?
I know you. Yeah. It's me, baby.
All right, we're back here, Bradley. Yeah. And what do you think, Zach?
Unbelievable. And
it's a crazy story. I got a little emotional when he was talking about his accident because really, the passion that he has behind what he does and the fact that tattooing was kind of like the thing that that got him through all the rehabilitation and everything, like it was pretty amazing. And I can't help but picture myself in that position. What if I can't tattoo anymore?
Yeah, you know, like in all seriousness, to be able to relearn how to draw and do what you do with the other hand is...
After being told by an occupational therapist that's impossible.
I can't wrap my head around it, but it just goes to show you that anything's really possible, you know? And I find it remarkable that you can train your brain, because that's what it really is. It's training your brain to be able to relearn how to draw and then tattoo with your other hand or arm, you know.
And tattooing's a two-handed job.
It sure is. And he's stretching. And he's stretching. I like it that it's the old school. You know, that's how I tattoo. Wrap the paper towel around my two fingers. But I still need the other hand, you know, to stretch. So it's remarkable to see how you can just adapt and learn how to do that. All right, man, let's go eat.
All right, let's wrap it up.
There is other stuff I wanted to talk about when I was thinking about it, but I can't think about it anymore.
We'll do it again next season. When you've either retired again or you've gone on to become the greatest tattooer to ever live. And there's no other path for you to take.
It's good.
Yeah.
All right, bud.
Well, hey, thanks for doing this again.
Always enjoy spending the time with you, bud.
Yeah, likewise. It's fun. And just another perk of doing the show is to meet someone like you who I probably wouldn't have met otherwise.
I appreciate that, Bello.
So it's cool.
Ciao, Bello. Ciao.
My man. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. I'll probably record another outro anyway, so I'm not even going to bother. Bye. One last big thank you to my sponsors this week, Eternal Ink and Machine Machine Co., along with my guest co-host Bradley Farrell and Zach Hunter, Southpaw Tattoos. Thank you, Zach, for sharing your incredible story. And I will be releasing the full interview with Zach later this season. Keep on the lookout for that. We talked for about 3 hours, and you got the gist of his story today, but there is a lot more to hear. And coming up later this week on the bonus episode 26 Extended, I'll be responding to a little bit of feedback that I got to last week's episode, as well as sharing a segment with Bradley when the cameras turned off, but the mics were still hot. And things took a turn when he told me about his decade-long fascination with the idea of electively amputating a hand. So we dig into that and talk a lot more about Zach's story. So don't miss that. It'll show up right in your podcast feed or right here on this YouTube channel, depending where you're getting this right now. As always, I'm Andrew Stortz. You can follow me on Instagram at Andrew Stortz, Stortz. All the links and info for our sponsors and our guests, it's all in the show notes. If you want to keep up on the show or catch up on past episodes, please check out booksclosepodcast.com. And if you're feeling inclined, give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. I hope you're enjoying season 3 so far. We're 2 deep, plenty to go. I will see you next time.